The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge. Chapter 25, The Higher and the Lower Knowledge, page 511. We have now completed our view of the path of knowledge and seen to what it leads. First, the end of Yoga of Knowledge is God possession. It is to possess God and be possessed by Him through consciousness, through identification, through reflection of the divine reality. But not merely in some abstraction, away from our present existence, but here also. Therefore, to possess the divine in Himself, the divine in the world, the divine within, the divine in all things and all beings. It is to possess oneness with God, and through that to possess also oneness with the universal, with the cosmos and all existences. Therefore, to possess the infinite diversity also in the oneness, but on the basis of oneness and not on the basis of division. It is to possess God in His personality and His impersonality, in His purity free from qualities, and in His infinite qualities, in time and beyond time, in His action and in His silence, in the finite and in the infinite. It is to possess Him not only in pure self, but in all self, not only in self, but in nature, not only in spirit, but in supermind, mind, life, and body. To possess Him with the spirit, with the mind, with the vital and the physical consciousness. And it is again for all these to be possessed by Him, so that our whole being is one with Him, full of Him, governed and driven by Him. It is, since God is oneness, for our physical consciousness to be one with the soul and the nature of the material universe, for our life to be one with all life, for our mind to be one with the universal mind, for our spirit to be identified with the universal spirit. It is to merge in Him, in the Absolute, and find Him in all relations. Secondly, it is to put on the divine being and the divine nature. And since God is Satchidananda, it is to raise our being into the divine being, our consciousness into the divine consciousness, our energy into the divine energy, our delight of existence into the divine delight of being. And it is not only to lift ourselves into this higher consciousness, but to widen into it in all our being, because it is to be found on all the planes of our existence and in all our members, so that our mental, vital, physical existence shall become full of the divine nature. Our intelligent mentality is to become a play of the divine knowledge will, our mental soul life a play of the divine love and delight, our vitality a play of the divine life, our physical being a mold of the divine substance. This God action in us is to be realized by an opening of ourselves to the divine gnosis and divine Ananda, and in its fullness by an ascent into and a permanent dwelling in the gnosis and the Ananda. For though we live physically on the material plane, and in normal outward-going life, the mind and soul are preoccupied with material existence. This externality of our being is not a binding limitation. We can raise our internal consciousness from plane to plane of the relations of Purusha with Prakriti, and even become, instead of the mental being dominated by the physical soul and nature, the Gnostic being, or the bliss self, and assume the Gnostic or the bliss nature. And by this raising of the inner life, we can transform our whole outward-going existence. Instead of a life dominated by matter, we shall then have a life dominated by spirit, with all its circumstances molded and determined by the purity of being, the consciousness infinite, even in the finite, the divine energy, the divine joy and bliss of the spirit. This is the goal. We have seen also what are the essentials of the method. But here we have first to consider briefly one side of the question of method, which we have hitherto left untouched. In the system of an integral yoga, the principle must be that all life is a part of the yoga. But the knowledge which we have been describing seems to be not the knowledge of what is ordinarily understood as life, but of something behind life. There are two kinds of knowledge: that which seeks to understand the apparent phenomenon of existence externally by an approach from outside through the intellect. This is the lower knowledge, the knowledge of the apparent world. Secondly, the knowledge which seeks to know the truth of existence from within, in its source and reality, by spiritual realization. Ordinarily, a sharp distinction is drawn between the two, and it is supposed that when we get to the higher knowledge, the God knowledge, then the rest, the world knowledge, becomes of no concern to us. But in reality, they are two sides of one seeking. All knowledge is ultimately the knowledge of God, through himself, through nature, through her works. Mankind has first to seek this knowledge through the external life, for until its mentality is sufficiently developed, spiritual knowledge is not really possible. And in proportion as it is developed, the possibilities of spiritual knowledge become richer and fuller. Science, art, philosophy, ethics, psychology, the knowledge of man and his past, action itself, are means by which we arrive at the knowledge of the workings of God through nature and through life. At first, it is the workings of life and forms of nature which occupy us. But as we go deeper and deeper and get a completer view and experience, each of these lines brings us face to face with God. Science, at its limits, even physical science, is compelled to perceive in the end the infinite, the universal, the spirit, the divine intelligence and will in the material universe. Still, more easily must this be the end with the psychic sciences, which deal with the operations of higher and subtler planes and powers of our being, and come into contact with the beings and the phenomena of the worlds behind, which are unseen, not sensible by our physical organs, but ascertainable by the subtle mind and senses. Art leads to the same end. The aesthetic human being intensely preoccupied with nature through aesthetic emotion must, in the end, arrive at spiritual emotion and perceive not only the infinite life, but the infinite presence within her, preoccupied with beauty in the life of man. He must, in the end, come to see the divine, the universal, the spiritual in humanity. Philosophy, dealing with the principles of things, must come to perceive the principle of all these principles and investigate its nature, attributes, and essential workings. So ethics must eventually perceive that the law of good which it seeks is the law of God, and depends on the being and nature of the master of the law. Psychology leads from the study of mind and the soul in living beings to the perception of the one soul and one mind in all things and beings. The history and study of man, like the history and study of nature, lead towards the perception of the eternal and universal power and being whose thought and will work out through the cosmic and human evolution. Action itself forces us into contact with the divine power, which works through, uses, overrules our actions. The intellect begins to perceive and understand, the emotions to feel and desire and revere, the will to turn itself to the service of the divine without whom nature and man cannot exist or move, and by conscious knowledge of whom alone we can arrive at our highest possibilities. It is here that yoga steps in. It begins by using knowledge, emotion, and action for the possession of the divine. For yoga is the conscious and perfect seeking of union with the divine, towards which all the rest was an ignorant and imperfect moving and seeking. At first, then, yoga separates itself from the action and method of the lower knowledge. For while this lower knowledge approaches God indirectly from outside and never enters his secret dwelling place, yoga calls us within and approaches him directly. While that seeks him through the intellect and becomes conscious of him from behind a veil, yoga seeks him through realization, lifts the veil, and gets the full vision, where that only feels the presence and the influence. Yoga enters into the presence and fills itself with the influence, where that is only aware of the workings and through them gets some glimpse of the reality. Yoga identifies our inner being with the reality and sees from that the workings. Therefore, the methods of yoga are different from the methods of the lower knowledge. The method of yoga in knowledge must always be a turning of the eye inward, and so far as it looks upon outer things, a penetrating of the surface appearances to get at the one eternal reality within them. The lower knowledge is preoccupied with the appearances and workings. It is the first necessity of the higher to get away from them to the reality of which they are the appearances, and the being and power of conscious existence of which they are the workings. It does this by three movements, each necessary to each other, by each of which the others becomes complete. Purification, concentration, identification. The object of purification is to make the whole mental being a clear mirror in which the divine reality can be reflected, a clear vessel, and an unobstructing channel into which the divine presence and through which the divine influence can be poured, a subtilized stuff which the divine nature can take possession of, new shape, and use to divine issues. For the mental being at present reflects only the confusions created by the mental and physical view of the world, is a channel only for the disorders of the ignorant lower nature, and full of obstructions and impurities which prevent the higher from acting. Therefore, the whole shape of our being is deformed and imperfect, indocile to the highest influences, and turned in its action to ignorant and inferior utilities. It reflects even the world falsely. It is incapable of reflecting the divine. Concentration is necessary, first, to turn the whole will and mind from the discursive divagation natural to them, following a dispersed movement of the thoughts, running after many branching desires, led away in the track of the senses and the outward mental response to phenomena. We have to fix the will and the thought on the eternal and real behind all. And this demands an immense effort, a one-pointed concentration. Secondly, it is necessary, in order to break down the veil which is erected by our ordinary mentality between ourselves and the truth, for outer knowledge can be picked up by the way, by ordinary attention and reception. But the inner, hidden, and higher truth can only be seized by an absolute concentration of the mind on its object, an absolute concentration of the will to attain it, and, once attained, to hold it habitually and securely unite oneself with it. For identification is the condition of complete knowledge and possession. It is the intense result of a habitual purified reflecting of the reality and an entire concentration on it. And it is necessary in order to break down entirely that division and separation of ourselves from the divine being and the eternal reality, which is the normal condition of our unregenerated, ignorant mentality. None of these things can be done by the methods of the lower knowledge. It is true that here also they have a preparing action, but up to a certain point and to a certain degree of intensity only. And it is where their action ceases that the action of yoga takes up our growth into the divine and finds the means to complete it. All pursuit of knowledge, if not vitiated by a too earthward tendency, tends to refine, to subtilize, to purify the being. In proportion as we become more mental, we attain to a subtler action of our whole nature, which becomes more apt to reflect and receive higher thoughts, a purer will, a less physical truth, more inward influences. The power of ethical knowledge and the ethical habit of thought and will to purify is obvious. Philosophy not only purifies the reason and predisposes it to the contact of the universal and the infinite, but tends to stabilize the nature and create the tranquility of the sage. And tranquility is a sign of increasing self-mastery and purity. The preoccupation with universal beauty, even in its aesthetic forms, has an intense power for refining and subtilizing the nature. And at its highest, it is a great force for purification. Even the scientific habit of mind and the disinterested preoccupation with cosmic law and truth not only refine the reasoning and observing faculty, but have, when not counteracted by other tendencies, a steadying, elevating, and purifying influence on the mind and moral nature which has not been sufficiently noticed. The concentration of the mind and the training of the will towards the reception of the truth and living in the truth is also an evident result, a perpetual necessity of these pursuits. And at the end, or in their highest intensities, they may and do lead first to an intellectual, then to a reflective perception of the divine reality, which may culminate in a sort of preliminary identification with it. But all this cannot go beyond a certain point. The systematic purification of the whole being for an integral reflection and taking in of the divine reality can only be done by the special methods of yoga. Its absolute concentration has to take the place of the dispersed concentrations of the lower knowledge. The vague and ineffective identification, which is all the lower knowledge can bring, has to be replaced by the complete, intimate, imperative, and living union which yoga brings. Nevertheless, yoga does not either in its path or in its attainment exclude and throw away the forms of the lower knowledge, except when it takes the shape of an extreme asceticism or a mysticism altogether intolerant of this other divine mystery of the world existence. It separates itself from them by the intensity, largeness, and height of its objective, and the specialization of its methods to suit its aim. But it not only starts from them, but for a certain part of the way carries them with it and uses them as auxiliaries. Thus it is evident how largely ethical thought and practice, not so much external as internal conduct, enter into the preparatory method of yoga, into its aim at purity. Again, the whole method of yoga is psychological. It might almost be termed the consummate practice of a perfect psychological knowledge. The data of philosophy are the supports from which it begins in the realization of God through the principles of his being. Only it carries the intelligent understanding, which is all philosophy gives, into an intensity which carries it beyond thought into vision, and beyond understanding into realization and possession. What philosophy leaves abstract and remote, it brings into a living nearness and spiritual concreteness. The aesthetic and emotional mind and aesthetic forms are used by yoga as a support for concentration even in the yoga of knowledge and are, sublimated, the whole means of the yoga of love and delight as life and action. Sublimated are the whole means of the yoga of works. contemplation of God in nature, contemplation and service of God in man, and in the life of man, and of the world in its past, present, and future, are equally elements of which the yoga of knowledge can make use to complete the realization of God in all things. Only all is directed to the one aim, directed towards God, filled with the idea of the divine, infinite, universal existence, so that the outward-going, sensuous, pragmatical preoccupation of the lower knowledge with phenomena and forms is replaced by the one divine preoccupation. After attainment, the same character remains. The yogin continues to know and see God in the finite and be a channel of God consciousness and God action in the world. Therefore, the knowledge of the world and the enlarging and uplifting of all that appertains to life comes within his scope. Only, in all he sees God, sees the supreme reality, and his motive of work is to help mankind towards the knowledge of God and the possession of the supreme reality. He sees God through the data of science, God through the conclusions of philosophy, God through the forms of beauty and the forms of good, God in all the activities of life, God in the past of the world and its effects, in the present and its tendencies, in the future and its great progression. Into any or all of these, he can bring his illumined vision and his liberated power of the spirit. The lower knowledge has been the step from which he has risen to the higher. The higher illumines for him the lower and makes it part of itself, even if only its lower fringe and most external radiation. End of chapter 25, page 518.